Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
That's awesome. Awesome.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Awesome. Awesome.
Oh, dude, that's awesome.
That's
awesome.
Really awesome.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
Oh, awesome.
That's
awesome.
With Stephen Bradford. Stevie B.
Bradford. A.
What's up, dude?
What's up, bro?
Oh, man. This is a fun
week. What a day. What a day.
This is a fun week. So, you know.
Great week.
Well, because I love when we
get together.
Well, that.
Whatever.
But also, like, we're tackling many different things.
Dude.
We're on all kinds of different phone calls. We're prepping for a travel weekend. This is a day of recording podcasts. You also work today. I work tomorrow. Maybe more podcasts tomorrow.
Yeah, a lot going on.
We're shooting videos. We found out. Hey, you know what we found out today?
What's that?
Our Tacoma and Portland shows are officially sold out.
Yeah, buddy. Thank you, Northwest. We are happy to come up there. We can't wait because, honestly, it's the only fall I'm going to get.
That's for dang sure.
Is going up there, and we can't wait to see you guys. So
yeah, we're
sold
so,
out, baby.
We're so grateful. Thank you, guys. We always appreciate when people come out and you guys come out like
fun.
That. It's just really – it's special. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Steve doesn't need an ego boost. You know me. I'm always looking for a little something. So thank you guys.
That's true. That's true. He tried to take off the Stone Cold on the website and just make it jackal.com. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? There's two of us. He's like, well, there were two of us. Now there's one. The one jackal.
Yeah.
That's it.
So life is good.
Yeah, how's life, dude? It's good?
Dude, it's funny. So every time I leave – Sacramento to come down here or go anywhere, wherever. If it's a weekday, I try to get my kids hot lunch because, you know, my wife works.
What does that mean?
Well, because my wife works at the high school now.
Yeah.
So she has to be at school when the kids are supposed to be at school.
Sure.
So she has to leave and drop them off early in the kids' school.
Yeah,
you can start dropping them off as early as 7:40.
Yeah.
So she drops them at 7:40, can make it to her school by 8, right?
Yeah.
So that's it's a bit of a hectic morning. So I try to take one of the things off the plate because I usually, when I'm home, I drop the kids off. I make lunch in the mornings.
Yeah.
And I drop them off.
Yep.
So she can go
to
work, right?
I'm in the
ballpark. When I'm gone, unless she wants to get help to drop them off every morning that I'm gone,
I know,
then she needs to work out that system, right? So I like to take one of the things off her plate by making sure she doesn't have to make lunch in the morning.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
That's nice.
Foolproof system. Until all of a sudden Finola is off hot lunch.
What do you mean? What does that mean, a hot lunch?
Hot lunch, so the school provides it, right?
Oh, they provide it. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. So I thought you meant like you were Postmating. It's Finola here.
Dude, that's a great idea. I can
Finola. Here's Finola here. Your chicken nuggets are here.
Dude, she would be.
Can you imagine if someone went, this is for Finola? What is it?
Uber
Eats?
It's
chicken McNuggets and fries and a milkshake.
Dude.
Dude, that's amazing.
So there's, I didn't realize this, but like some kids' parents come and meet them for lunch. I didn't know you could do that.
What? Yeah, you can?
Yeah, at their school they can.
That's cool.
And anytime that there's, sometimes there's an organized, hey, come have lunch,
with your kid,
and everybody always brings the kids McDonald's, and my kids haven't had, they have tried McDonald's at this point,
sure,
but it's not something that
it's not a staple.
It's not
a
staple
of
their diet, right?
Yeah.
So gosh, if Postmates showed up with a Happy Meal for my kids, I mean,
they'd be rock stars, and so would you.
But the thing is that I can't.
So what does that mean? She doesn't want a hot lunch though.
Okay, so she's like, if it was pizza every day, she'd.
Oh, so she doesn't like the – does she know what it's going to be?
She
or is it kind of like,
she
hey,
asks.
Here's a surprise.
So here's the thing. She asks. And
that is so funny, dude.
And she'll only do it if she likes it. And Juna is like – she's like – she gets why they're getting it too, right?
Yeah.
So she's like understanding the
dilemma. I'll take one for the team.
Yes. So the first time I noticed this was a day that it was beef soft taco. And Finola's like, I'm not eating beef soft taco. And then Juna was kind of against it too, but she's like, I'll try it. And so they came back and I was like, how was the beef soft taco? And Juno was like, it was actually very good. And I was like, thank you, Juno.
Yes, hello.
Fino was like, oh, yeah.
My stomach hurts.
So today.
Dude, I wouldn't eat beef soft taco either, by the way. Just so you know, I'm on her side because that sounds like, hamburger helper in a wrapped in a burrito. Well,
they make everything homemade in the kitchen. Okay. Because like, it's a smaller school, you know.
Sure.
And then tomorrow is – so today is chicken soft taco. So I didn't think it was going to be an issue.
No, that sounds good.
And then tomorrow is mac and cheese.
That's even better.
So I was like, we're free and clear on this week because I only thought beef soft taco and nachos because nachos are too spicy for them. So I thought beef soft – I thought we were safe because what will happen is the morning of you'll get – You'll get a meltdown.
Okay.
I don't want hot lunch. You need to make me a lunch.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to get
nightmare.
Out, if you're trying to get out the door,
I get it.
And you get a screaming kid.
Anybody who has kids
make
gets
my lunch.
It.
So I was like, okay, great. She's not going to deal with that chicken soft taco mac and cheese. I said, Fanola, I'll be back in a couple of days. She's like, are we eating hot lunch tomorrow? I was like, damn it! I was trying to
yeah.
slide out,
yeah.
sneak out, and I was like, yes. But I was like, it's chicken soft taco. And she's like, but I don't like chicken soft taco.
Oh, no.
Ah! Oh.
Okay, so here's what you do.
Okay.
You bribe them.
With?
Anything they want.
I'm not sure.
With anything. Say, come here. Come here for a second. Mm-hmm. So here's what we're doing.
Okay.
You know I'm leaving.
Yeah.
We're going to help mom out. Chicken soft tacos. We eat tacos.
Right.
Tacos are nice.
Right.
Right. You like tacos.
Yeah.
So here's what you're going to do.
Yeah.
You're going to eat the taco.
Eat the taco.
And then you're going to tell me what you want. What do you want in exchange for eating the chicken soft tacos without a meltdown? And don't say anything to mom. This is between us.
I like this.
Do you want?
Right.
You know, do you want a Barbie? You want some candy? What do you want? What's your favorite thing? What do you want?
Does it need to be an equal trade or?
No, absolutely not. The value that you're giving her has to be way more than a taco because then she'll shut up. You
got
to keep them silent.
But should I start low?
No. You got to say, what do you want?
Because
they might say, oh, I want a candy bar. Okay, great. Candy bar.
Great.
It's yours.
Right.
If they want to start there, great. If not, if they go, oh, I want a dollhouse. I go, well, maybe we'll start with the doll.
Right.
And next time I leave and you shut up, I'll give you a dollhouse. But I'm telling you, dude, this is a little bit of a negotiation game. And every parent negotiates.
It's true.
Right? So I would do that, and I would tell her, but she'd rat me out. That's the problem.
She would.
My daughter would rat me out.
She would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, because I go, here's some candy corn, whatever. Mom, Dad's giving me candy corn. You know what I mean? So.
Well, see, the problem that I run into is like, June is like, well, do I get a candy bar? And
yes.
Yeah, and the
absolutely.
Like, yes. Yeah.
And then you shut your little sister up.
Yeah.
Remind her.
Remind her, right.
Yes.
It's our secret kids.
You're the enforcer. You shut her up.
All right. This is a good plan.
We're going to try it next time.
I know, right? Oh, my gosh. All right. Well, I guess all my problems are solved now.
No, I don't know about that.
Well, we have a guest today. I'm very excited.
Yeah, man. It's great. Look, the fact that we get to do this and talk to people, which we love to do, and get to know people. And
we do it without guests. I mean, we talk.
We do. Yeah. We do it all the time. So this is great. I've been looking forward to having this guy because I really don't know him that well.
Right.
So looking forward to it.
So, Steve, we have somebody with us today. Someone
we do. Thank God we do.
I really enjoy.
It's not just us. Thank God.
And someone who gets to press the buttons of the soap genre in a way that is super fun isn't one of just like your boring stock characters. This guy gets to have a lot of fun, and I'm excited he's here with us.
He does. I'm excited too, man.
Perry Shen, you know him as Brad, is here with us today.
Perry.
Hey.
What's up, man?
Brad.
Brad is here.
Brad.
Yes.
Hey, Brad.
It's
Perry.
So weird. That's the name that I grew up with, and I just don't associate myself with the name anymore.
Oh, wow.
Especially in Southern California, like, Brad is
right.
like such
Brad
a,
goes to USC.
Yeah, he goes to USC. I'm from a small town in New Hampshire, and so, like, Brad growing up was, like, something that was just me. But now that I've come out of New Hampshire and am in Southern California, Brad is not...
Right. Even when someone refers to you like on Twitter as Brad, I'm like, who are they talking about? It takes me a while. I'm like, oh,
yeah.
Bradford.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny. Anyway, but so how do you associate with the name Brad? Like, is that like that's it's funny?
Right.
It's funny.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's more funny where it's the Brad Cooper, you know, the
whole
moniker.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so, like,
yeah.
You know, I was like, really? That's really my name? I thought it was just like a placeholder. Like,
this guy's
not going to be around for a while.
Yeah.
I'll just call him Brad Cooper. I mean, even my ID tag
had
someone else's face on it, like some other Asian guy. And so I'm like, okay, I'm probably not going to be here for a while.
That's amazing.
That is so, but so when you hear, when someone says Brad in a crowd, do you turn around?
No, I don't.
No?
No
if he hears Perry. yeah. he turns around.
Right, that makes sense. Yeah. Well, because, I mean, you know, he gets called Jason everywhere. Okay. And, like, if I hear someone in the crowd say Spinelli, I'm going to turn around.
Yeah.
So, but I know Brad's a little more general than...
Yeah, it's yeah, you know what? It hasn't happened when I wasn't looking, so I can't speak to that. But if someone's approaching me, says Brad, then I will interact.
Dude, this is amazing because I really don't know a lot about you.
Yeah, I know.
Like, we don't work together, exactly. So you know, people think that, you know, when everybody's here, everyone's here at the same time, and we all do our scenes together, and then we watch the show after together and sing Kumbaya, and you know, it's a big happy family, which it is. But, you know, when we cross paths, I've never worked with you, and sometimes I'll see you, and sometimes I won't see you for a couple months, you know. So I love being able to sit down with somebody that I don't really know.
Yeah, no, I was excited. I was like, oh, I finally get to talk to Steve.
Right, yeah.
Well, and like,
and Brad.
Well, we've had...
who are you talking about?
What's Brad?
And we've had some scenes, but certainly not in a while.
Yes, no.
And just around the... You came in right around the time that Ellie came in, right?
Yes.
Right. It was in that same storyline of sorts. So it's been, what, how many? It's been how many years now?
6.5 years.
Dude, that's great.
Crazy town, I know. Right?
It's supposed to be just 4 episodes, so...
four episodes turns into 6 years.
Well, he was supposed to be here for 2 months, and it was 12 years.
Oh, yeah.
So I can relate.
Dude, the coolest thing, though, it's always because I came on the show reoccurring.
Yeah.
It's like... Everyone comes on, we're like here for years. They can't get rid of us.
Right.
And it's something about, oh, we're going to hire a contract player. They go through all this stuff. They test 5 guys.
Right.
And then the guy's dead in a month.
Well, yeah.
You know what I mean?
We come in with low expectations a little bit, right? Like, oh, we don't, if this doesn't work
out, that's true.
When you come in and you're like, oh, okay, this person we're going to sign for 4 years, and boy, they're the linchpin of this legacy story. Oh, God.
The pressure's on, buddy.
It's going to be a letdown, right? Like, I mean, that's a lot of expectation. Yeah.
We'll talk about you. I want to know about your, you know, up to this point.
Right.
But when you got here, were you kind of thrown into the fire? Did you have a lot of dialogue? Or did that progressively get more and more and more, and then you had to adjust to that? Or what was it like?
Thrown into the fire, into the thick of it.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. When I had gotten this job, I've already been acting for, you know, over 15 years at that point, and I kind of knew what to expect in every situation with, like, a procedural or indie film or a big film. Like, I kind of know what to expect, and when I came here, it kicked me in the ass out of complacency because I'm like, whoa, what's going on? I don't know what – and took, like, for the first 3 months, it took, like, every trick up my sleeve just to keep pace with everybody.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm like, how do new people just who have never done anything this way?
This is like your first job. If this was someone's first job, how would that? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I guess, you know, it's like you sink or swim, right? If you don't succeed, bye, you know?
Dude, I love it. Because I thought you were going to say, yeah, I knew what I was going to do when I got in here and I kicked everyone's ass. But everybody says the same thing. No matter where they're from, they're like, dude, how do people even begin to do what we do?
Exactly.
Yeah. On a daily basis.
Yeah. And I think when I talk to people then who about this medium, and I said, you know what, it is the hardest job, and it's like it doesn't get the credit. And then once you tell them the schedule, like, you know, we got to shoot 250 episodes a year as opposed to the 22 episodes in prime time or the 10 episodes on Netflix, you know?
Right.
And it's like, you gotta just one take, literally, not just BS one take, you know? It's like, no, it's for real one take, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, two at most. And then three, if you consistently need three, it's like, bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, you're gone. You know? Yeah.
No, it's interesting, man. It's a whole new animal here.
Yeah.
Do you remember the character breakdown for your role?
Oh, absolutely.
What was it?
Yeah, it was... he's a guy that runs, he's a lab tech, but he doesn't always play by the rules to get what he wants.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
But so you had no feel for what his life preferences would be or the fact that he would have a family.
No.
Or
the scene that I had was to be flirting with a doctor saying, hey, if you, give it up a little bit, I'll change these lab results.
Right. Mm.
And it's written as doctor somebody. I just assumed it was a female.
Oh, sure.
Right? Yeah. And I'm like, because I'm usually playing the boy next door. So I'm like, okay, I gotta like man him
turn
up a little bit.
That's so funny, right?
Yeah. And I lowered my voice a couple of octaves, you know, I'm real tough, you know. And it's like,
that's funny.
And then like, And then I find out, you know, and then right. this first scene is with Felix, and I'm flirting yeah. with him. I'm like, oh.
And that, but that was right away. That was right away. That didn't come later. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And then later I said, okay, maybe this guy kind of like, he swings any which way just to get sure. what he wants.
I'm like, oh, right. Oh, that's fun too.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then later as I'm reading
Spinelli
more and
does
more.
Too.
Yeah. 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 Hey, anywhere yeah. I can get
Sonny,
it.
Sonny, all the time with yeah. Sonny.
Right. Right. All the underlying. Yeah. And then as I read more and more and more episodes, and I was like, go to my wife, I'm like, no, I think he's gay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think he's gay.
Right.
Which was actually great because it tricked me into playing him different. Because if I knew he was gay going in ahead,
oh, you would have played him differently.
I totally would have.
Sure. Yeah. That's
interesting.
Right.
You know, it tricked me out of the box, and I remember them writing in saying when Felix says, "I didn't know you're gay," and then he says, and they'd written and goes, "Because you're always so butch."
Oh, that's
like,
funny.
Right, whereas I would probably play not like effeminate, but just right. a yeah. little lighter. I wouldn't, yeah. you know, I yeah. wouldn't. So it right. was a different character, different gay character.
And
than
you've
ever right. seen.
You could have yeah. said, "I didn't know I was either."
Right? Yeah. Yeah. I just kept that quiet. I'm like, "Yeah, I knew. I'm an actor.
I didn't know." That's so funny. Wow. But yeah, six yeah. years. You said you worked. You know, you were acting 10, 15
yeah.
years.
Yeah. What? Where are you from, man?
Yeah.
Where?
New York, Queens.
Oh,
are
wow.
you?
Yeah. Like Entourage. Those kids. Those boys.
Wow,
they're like,
dude.
Yeah, like,
what neighborhood in Queens?
Jackson Heights, okay. Elmhurst, Astoria.
Yeah. yeah.
Astoria. We go to. Astoria
I know you guys
lot.
Go
yeah,
there all the
yeah,
time.
Yeah, we love it there. Yeah. It's so cool, man.
So you spent all your youth there, or
pretty much
like through high school? You
through high school, and then college is when I came out here.
Okay, so at what point in your youth did this kind of find you? Did you realize that? Does your family have any ties to the
no.
entertainment industry?
In hindsight, it was I've always was interested in. I've always you know yeah. watch a lot of. Film. I was a latchkey kid, so okay. like left at home a lot, yeah. and raised on film and television, and it just sort of influenced on the way things I would outlook on life. Like yeah. I didn't watch TV as a way of like just watching mindlessly. Yeah. I was like studying. Like I after a while, like I well like for example like Three's Company.
Yeah,
when he was like coffee, tea, I'm like, ooh, this part's gonna be the funny part.
Oh right. wow, you could dissect it like.
And
that.
I didn't
yeah.
know that was the beats of a joke, three beats, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I just knew that. Oh, the funny part's coming up here, but I didn't have any tech, you know, formal training. So yeah. like all my instincts and storytelling, like everybody would always want to play with when I was doing G.I. Joes and stuff, and
yeah.
I would always play like they would do this amazing thing to show them at their best.
Yeah,
and then. Someone would get kidnapped from them, which
oh,
they were
funny.
like the conflict.
Yeah.
And then they would save the day and then rise to the occasion. I didn't realize those were the arcs of a story, right?
Sure, yeah.
So it was like all this like things that I didn't know, but I knew that I enjoyed it. And like I was really into – I still am into comic books, which are like a storyboard
yeah,
of a movie.
Sure.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, so I think I was just very afraid. I didn't do it in high school. I didn't do it in college. I was a business major.
Oh, wow.
I think
wow.
I was just always afraid that, you know, I didn't basically didn't see anybody that looked like me doing it to be
sure.
like, oh, if he can do it, I can do it, you know?
Right.
Right
of course.
So
right.
just, I think looking in hindsight, that was a big factor.
What were you into as a kid then, besides comic books?
Comic books, movies, pretty much those were it.
You were just staying at home watching movies and reading comic books?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And when I went to college, I interned for Marvel Comics. I mean, I wanted to go to, like, the business side of...
Oh, that's cool.
Of the
now you're on the lot with Marvel.
Exactly, yeah. Every time I look at that side, I'm like, this is cool.
That's pretty... Cool. That's got to be
so
cool.
So what was the turning point then?
The turning point was I was cramming in. I was going to do like this. This is called a Juris Doctor, where you get your MBA and your law degree at the same time.
Dude.
Oh my gosh.
And so I was like, I'm going to have a lot of school ahead of me. So I'm going to just cram and take all these college courses. Like I took like 20 credits a semester. And by the time I was a junior, I had technically had enough credits to graduate. And that kind of sunk in where I'm like, I'm supposed to be going into the real world with this business degree. And I don't want to do this. You know,
oh,
I'm like,
wow. Was there a day where you were like, I don't think this is it?
Yeah, it was an alumni. He's coming back, and he was fun. We would hang out, and then he went into the business world, and he came yeah. back. He's like, man, I'm kind of stuck now doing this.
Wow.
And I'm kind of on this path, and I've got kids, and I've got a mortgage, and I got this, that. And I'm like, wow, if I'm going to do something, quote unquote, you know, not smart, you know,
yeah.
it would be have to be now. And actually, my parents were going to pay for all 4 years of college. So that final year, I took all the courses that I always had looked in the course catalog and said, this would be really cool to take. And they're all arts courses.
And this is all still undergrad?
Still undergrad, yeah. And I'm and so my senior year, I was like the president of my business fraternity, but I wasn't taking a single business course because I was done. Yeah. I was taking all like editing and, acting and all this stuff, and I crammed in like a media studies minor in there, and I just had the best time of my life. And now that's when I'm like, okay, this after college, I'm coming out here because I wanted to do film and television.
But you say you went to school out here too?
No. So when I came out here after college, I treated it like a business.
So did you know anybody out here, or did you just like, hey, I'm going?
I there was a theater company, All Asian American Theater Company, that did sketches like Saturday Night Live, and they travel colleges, and they're just really funny, good.
Where did you go to school?
State University of Buffalo.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so when they came out to my school, I used to like write my own stuff and perform stuff on the side, like talent shows and stuff.
Yeah.
And then people were like, oh, they're the best thing that's been out here ever. And I'm like, what about my stuff? They're like, yeah, better than your stuff. I'm like, what? Because I hadn't seen them perform. They just heard people talk about it. So I got the number of the director. I came out here. I those are the only people I knew. I talked to the director, and the audition process was really getting to know the people in the group and how you gelled.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they're still to this day because it was an audition competition process, they're still my best friends to this very day. It's been over 25 years.
So you've worked with that company still?
Yeah. So I joined the company and I toured with them for 5 years.
Where? Everywhere?
Everywhere. All colleges all across the country. Yeah.
Wow. And what was that show like? Like, what did you guys do? Improv? It was all sketch?
Everything. Sketch and improv.
And it was an hour show, or was it
about 90 minutes? Hour. Yeah. I mean, one for example, like, there were some written out pieces, but then the best, the final, kind of the favorite was when we would all sit on stage and the director would say a single word, and he said, like childhood. And then all of us would one by one stand up and tell a story about childhood. It could be short, could be long, could be sad, could be funny. But the great thing that really drilled this into me from the get-go, which was that all these guys, they weren't actors per se. Mm-hmm. They were just telling an honest story that was true to them.
Yeah.
And it became like universal to everybody.
That's cool.
You know, and it wasn't BS or anything like that. And it really instilled into me, as long as you're just telling the truth, it's going to touch somebody.
Yeah.
And so that piece was always my favorite, because one scene, you know, one story, you know, people would be laughing like crazy, and then another story would be about not being able to hug his dad, and then people would be like crying. It's like, it was like a roller coaster. It was beautiful.
Wow.
It was
called, and then how for you, you know, because we're lucky enough now to do comedy shows,
right?
You know, Bradford and I, but the improv just gets better and better, right? The more you do it,
absolutely,
the better it gets,
yes.
Right? And so, like, we're on the road a week, and at the end of the week, we're like, we're getting it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how was it for you? Because you guys would, how often would you do the shows?
Mm-hmm.
Would you just go for just college to college, weekend, or during the week? Or how
did it work? We'd probably go every other week, and then, like, in between then, we would have, like, a rehearsal period.
Wow,
just,
that's
like,
great.
Just, like, kind of, like, gel together and do exercises, bonding exercises. And I remember, like, the fourth year, I remember we were so tight.
Yeah.
It's like we weren't even nervous before the show. Just like we were just looking forward to it. But we didn't know what was going to happen because it was that improv
But
part.
Isn't that so cool, though, how, like, just aware you are and how all the tools are just, like, there to grab?
Absolutely.
You know? It's just
and
really,
it's almost like
fascinating.
With that, you have, like, that's the reason why they're still my closest friends, is that you have this camaraderie that's like, it's almost like camp, you know?
Totally.
It's like so special than anyone else is doing. You have this special moment, and it's like, it's
off stage and on, though,
right?
Right. The
connection,
too, there's a great connection on stage,
right?
You know, and you just
he's telling you how much he loves me.
Yeah, yeah, no, I totally get the bond.
I mean, I love him for about another year,
right?
It'll be about another year. You know,
I would say it's probably what people, if you were in the military, you know, you go through this short period of this, like,
intensive,
you know, watching each other's back and heartbreak and victories. And it's like,
sure.
Well, it's funny, you know, most actors, we, you know, in other mediums, you get that because you're doing a movie for a month or two, or you're doing a play for 3 months in a town that no one's native to. You know, we get it as artists, as actors, we get a lot of those kind of bubble experiences where you're thrown into this team and you got to make something work and you got to problem solve and
Right, right.
Depend on each other to get through it.
Right.
Right? And then you come to a place like this, and you're like, hey.
throw me a life preserver.
So, hey, we're here for 15 years, and I'll see you in maybe in a couple months.
And, right, right.
Yeah.
And I won't save your ass in a scene, so don't worry about that.
But it's interesting, right? Like that, and I think – you know, most experiences that young actors have is more that than this.
Right.
Right?
I don't know. Is it?
Well, it is on the East Coast, and it is doing theater.
Right.
Not when you jump into television as a young strapping
17-year-old. Well, no, because obviously when I did, there was a lot of kids who just started in commercials.
Right.
Out here. You know, and then they all of a sudden, hey, and then you're doing guest spots, and then you're on a series.
Right.
And then you get your thing.
Yeah, you never get that.
So the culture here is much different.
Totally.
Than growing up on the East Coast, because you didn't have the avenue unless you went to New York.
Right.
But here you're like, hey, do a commercial workshop or whatever other workshop, and then you get an agent. There in New Hampshire, you ain't getting an agent.
No.
Right.
Right away to even get in the game. Right?
Yeah.
Out here, you're thrown into the game. So I don't know if that's the path of
that's
least
interesting
resistant.
You point that out, because I'm noticing that with my kid who's like high school age now, and her friends getting into it.
You have high school kids?
I do, yeah.
Dude, you look like you're 30 freaking years old, man.
I'm like 15 years older than that. I'm 46.
Are you?
That's amazing. Nice. I love that.
But yeah, I'm seeing her friends who are like getting into the business.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the heck? They're already doing this. It's like, slow down. Like, I have no interest in my kid. Like, if she wants to get into this, it's fine. But, like, I want her to do the way I did. Like, have your experiences, your life experiences.
Well,
and then
that's interesting. It's funny that it's never come up.
Yeah. This is an interesting point.
The allure. So, when I started doing theater, I, in no way, or shape, or form, did I think I'd move to LA and be on television.
Right.
Like, that was never something that I saw ahead of me.
Interesting. Because that wasn't the mission.
I did it because, oh my God, I feel alive with these people.
Right.
I feel like when we do a show, it's like, oh my God, it's
magic.
Like magic. It's a drug.
And the chicks.
Well that too. But that
goes without saying.
But that, like, the feeling of creating something with passionate people and being passionate about it yourself, that human connection, that's the drug.
That is,
being in front of people and doing that all together, the teamwork, the camaraderie, all that, that was the allure.
Yeah.
So, but what is it out here? Is it just like because it's the business that you feel like you should want and it looked glamorous and being on TV? Like, because did doing the commercial go like, oh, this feels good? Or does it just feel cool
to
be on a commercial?
Well, first thing is, let's go back to what Perry said about your daughter, right? So it's interesting because when I did start, I was thrown kind of into the fire and I had no experience.
Right, right.
I had no theater experience. I had no experience at all. And I was super green. So I'm going to all these auditions and they're like, he's green. This is all I heard for
you.
He's green, he's green, he's green, he's green. And then I had to start taking classes and figure it out for a while, for a good year, start taking some sense memory classes, whatever, scene study. And then I have to go back out and prove myself. Oh, okay, he's better.
Right.
He's good, he's getting good. Okay, great. Yeah, we'll see him again. Great, great, great. But I don't know what it is, man. I think it's because most people who come here who end up being actors, I think, aren't from here.
Sure.
Right?
We're
from – I'm from Ohio, and it's a latchkey kid watching TV. It was the coolest thing ever, watching series and, you know, movies and stuff. And then my dad lived out here, and I'm like, oh, that'd be cool, man. It'd be cool to be on TV.
Right.
You know, how do I do that?
Right.
You get an agent, and you go to an audition.
Right.
Well,
right.
You don't have to learn how to act first. You should. You should.
Right.
But that's kind of how it goes, because you had the drama log, you had open calls.
Yeah.
You had it right there to just go out and audition right away.
Yeah.
Like, you're thrown into the game.
Yeah. The machine is in place.
Right there.
Yeah.
Just open the gate and you're in the play. You're in Disneyland.
Right.
Go.
Which is not to say that there's anything less valid. It's just like, it's just a different experience.
Oh,
that's all.
Well, yeah,
you know.
Sure.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, listen, the life experience and the studying and doing scenes and theater and stuff that you guys did, it's invaluable when you get the open door.
Right.
Right? So you're not having to make up for lost time.
Right.
You know, just getting an opportunity because of the way you may look or whatever, and then you don't have the skills to back it up.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Know?
Yeah.
So, but it is interesting. Here, you're in the game right away.
Absolutely.
Somebody knows somebody to get you a reading or get you a manager, an agent, or whatever. Anywhere else in the country, it's just not the same.
Yeah. And it's just like, if I feel that way also with like organized sports for kids these days? Because it's like there's like a machine in place because there's like there's like tournaments that you can do. It's like like my kid
travel
wants
teams
to,
and man
wants to like get into a sport in high school. It's like it's too late. Because you're against people who have been doing it since they were six already.
And all
it's,
year
it's,
long,
yeah,
by
yeah,
the way.
It's so specialized. It's, yeah. Which is, it's like, which it's, is, I
to
think
me, that's not how we grew up because now we're old guys talking about it.
Right.
But that's, you know, you played the sport of the season.
Right.
You didn't play baseball all year long.
Right, yeah.
And all these sports, well, yeah, you know.
But. What is your kid into?
How many kids do you have, by the way?
I have two daughters, 14 and 11.
Okay.
And the older one, she's not very athletic, but she was like... had an interest in volleyball, and she went out for it in middle school, and she was so far behind.
Well, yeah. Have you ever talked to Eden?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And then you realize, oh yeah.
Yeah. And you're going against her.
Right.
Who already has a scholarship to USC.
Right? Well, that's the entry into getting scholarships.
Absolutely.
Is volleyball.
Yes.
That's what they say. Yeah. Volleyball and golf now.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so golf or tennis, maybe? I don't know.
Right, yeah. But I mean, then my youngest daughter just started playing softball, and she's been doing it 3 years.
Dude.
So that means she was eight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She was already a little too late already.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But now she's loving it, but, you know, thank goodness.
Yeah, that's another thing. A buddy of mine who trained, he was drafted, but now he trains a bunch of high profile kids and manages teams. And he said, your daughter's played softball. He goes, it's wide open for scholarships and softball.
Right, yeah.
You know, not that you're just playing a sport to get into school, but whatever.
Yeah. Well, because that leads into the specialization thing. It's like, okay, if you want a scholarship, you got to be the best at it, and you got to can't do anything else.
I know.
It's so hard because I'm like, you change your idea of what you want to be and what you want to do so many times. It's kind of like,
sure,
you're going to make this choice now,
right,
and it's going to be forever.
You got to stick with it.
Yeah. It's interesting because as a parent, there's that time where do you stop pushing?
Right.
Right? It's like my brother-in-law was great in golf, and he was playing varsity and freshman and played college and couldn't get around the mental game of it. And he's like, I wish you guys would have kept pushing me.
Mm. Interesting.
You know what I mean? He goes, I wish you would have just been like, hey, don't quit. Go.
Right.
Go freaking see a sports psychologist. Go figure it out, you know? But then it could have gone the other way.
Yeah.
You're like, you made me play and I hate your guts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we saw that a lot with the kids he grew up with. The kids were playing 24 hours a day for, you know, at 13, they were alcoholics and smoking weed and they were done golfing.
Yeah.
Because they were done.
That's why you play golf, to drink.
That's Jim McMahon golf, baby. A beer a hole, you're good.
Oh, I love that.
Barefoot.
You mean John Daly?
Both of them. And Jim McMahon.
That's a good one.
Yeah, but that's before your time, Bradford. This episode of That's Awesome is brought to you by our friends at FabFitFun. You know it's my favorite season.
What's your favorite season?
Fall.
Oh, yeah.
And how do we celebrate the changing of seasons besides candy corn?
Yeah.
With a FabFitFun box, of course.
That's right. As a reminder, FabFitFun is a women's lifestyle subscription box with full-size premium beauty, lifestyle, fitness, home, and wellness products sent straight to your doorstep each season.
People love every box, but they love
the
fall
box,
and it'll sell out soon, so don't wait.
That's right. FabFitFun box, I don't know, it's kind of like that it's a gift from that friend that, you know, knows you the best and knows exactly what you need or, I don't know, just want. Okay, so for example, your wallet is getting a little shabby, right? But you haven't.
Mine is, actually.
You have your wallet's always shabby. But you haven't put a new one on the list just yet, but bam, your FabFitFun box arrives.
What are you, Emerald?
And in your FabFitFun box, there's a brand new cut from the cloth vegan wallet. Your friend, FabFitFun, because they are your friend, they have come through yet again. Or it's an ultra soft plush scarf, a travel yoga mat from Anthropologie, a lunch tote from Kate Spade, or some, especially for you, Steve, some super fun sparkly ear crawlers from Bobble Bar.
Oh, okay.
Say Bobble Bar.
Bobble Bar.
Bobble.
Bobble.
Bobble Bar.
Bobble Bar. Every box has a value of over $200, if not more. You get them for $49.99. And if you use our code, that's awesome. Spell it out. That's awesome. One word. It's $39.99 for your first box. $39.99 for a box of amazing full-size products worth over $200.
It's just plumb crazy. And you know what? You can choose to customize your box if you'd like. So you know you're going to love everything that arrives.
Yeah, so get your fall box before they're gone by going to FabFitFun.com. And don't forget to enter the code THAT'S AWESOME for $10 off your first box.
All right, Steve, our show has a lot of families in it,
yes,
right? The Quartermains, the Spencers,
the Hardys,
the Corinthos, right?
The Scorpios.
And yeah. On our show, we tell the stories of those families. That's why
we
our
do.
Show exists, right? But I bet there's a lot of people out there with great family stories.
I'm sure there are.
Right. So how do they get their family's stories told? You know, some people try to record elders recounting
stories.
That's
what my grandparents did.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Some people maybe take notes or journal about it.
Right.
Well, but what if you could take all those stories and make it in this beautiful, presentable gift?
Yeah. That sounds good.
Forever Note is awesome. They make it easy for families to preserve their most precious moments, traditions, and stories. And this is incredible. The process, you sign up a loved one or yourself and schedule a convenient phone interview.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Then the team transcribes the audio from the interview. Forever Note prints it as a beautiful keepsake quality book. It's simple.
So you get a whole book, like, with pictures and audio,
yep,
and text.
Yes.
And stories that you can actually hand to somebody, read, and you pass it down that way. Because, listen, here's the truth. Like, if... You know, with all the video stuff we do, like, I have a phone full of 10,000 videos
right.
that will probably never make it to the next generation.
Correct.
Right?
Right.
But wasn't that the point we were all excited about? Like, we don't have to have tapes anymore.
Absolutely.
But you get to pass down. You always pull out the photo, right? You have the photo book or whatever, and you say, oh, this was – and then you're telling the story about each picture.
Yeah.
Now you can kind of do both, which is
you can
kind
preserve
of cool.
your family stories.
Yeah, I like it.
Forever with Forever Notes.
Don't be such a cheeseball.
Oh, come on. So now some other services like this might cost upward of a couple grand, right?
Mm.
This starts at $99. And if you go to forevernote.com and use the code AWESOME, you get $25 off your order.
That's right. That's
pretty,
great.
Pretty
yeah,
amazing.
Give the gift of a lifetime and just in time for the holidays.
It really
what
is.
What a better time because you're actually with everybody.
Yeah.
Also.
And I mean, such a cool process. What a cool thing to be able to give someone in your family and, you know, follow them through the process and participate it as a family. And at the end of it, you come out with this beautiful book to share with generations.
That's cool.
ForeverNote.com. Use code AWESOME for $25.
ForeverNote. Go check it out.
So you do that 5 years on that with that
5 years. Yeah.
Right.
With
and
that
so
group.
Then, now. Did you was that something that you could pursue other things at the same time, or did you have to be all in on that?
No, that was just very low key, but it was just kind of like honing things, but very informally. Mm. There wasn't any formal training. It's just kind of like making the most of your instincts, right?
Okay.
But then later, when I actually tried to enter the machine and get into like casting rooms, I just didn't. I knew you needed more than just your instincts, right? So that's when I. And like, because I had a marketing background, I had found, like, creative ways to get into the room where, like, this is before Photoshop. So, like, I would create, like, fake magazine tear sheets. So it would basically be my headshot and my credits overlaid and with, like, the magazine-style credits. Like, Perry's wearing this from, you know, Dolce & Gabbana, you know. And
dude,
a fake,
that's awesome.
Fake page number. So it was a headshot and resume, but in a different format.
Right.
It got me some heat. So
yeah.
People were like, oh, wow, he's in this magazine that I've never heard of, but, you know, they're writing about him.
So you were presenting it like, oh, I'll fool them.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Or were you trying to be clever?
Yeah,
were you
no,
just trying to have fun?
I'm trying to say, hey, this is me.
I'm different.
I would like to have a meeting with you. So
yeah.
I sent it to all the casting people.
Yeah.
So they got me in the door, but
yeah.
When they gave me like sides, like, you know, audition or with an agent, try to get an agent,
right.
I just wouldn't have that you know, extra thing. So basically,
right.
I said, you know, I need some formal training. So I need to catch up. So what I did was during the Oscar speeches, when people win their Oscars and they would thank their instructor, I copied down all those names and I studied with all of those people. You know, it's like a huge cram session.
That's
you
genius.
Know?
Dude, that's like,
so,
you're so way above us, dude. I feel like Homer Simpson sitting here right now across
but
from you.
But it was not... It wasn't great because
that's easier said than done, right? You can't train with all. Like,
I did, and that, but the thing is that so many different conflicting
ideas.
You, I was taking Meisner with Uta Hagen,
yeah.
And then improv with the Groundlings, and it's like I would be like so big in a scene because I just come from the Groundlings, and I'm like, hey, take it down. I'm like, okay, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah,
wow.
But I needed a crash course because I needed to make up for lost time.
Sure,
you know, not. Being, you know, trained formally.
So now looking back, like, because we, you know, obviously talk about training and acting and stuff and how, like, if a kid gets with a wrong coach, it could be right. detrimental and damaging because he picks up bad habits from Absolutely. Someone who may not be great or Absolutely. Teaching him. So what would you – you know, it's trial by fire, right? That's how you jumped in. You're like, I'm just going. I'm doing Absolutely. It.
Well, I mean, having these people mention these instructors, I knew that was kind of a really good referral. Like, hey,
sure.
they got a friggin'
yes,
Oscar.
That's true.
You
know?
Did you find
that's
something true. That worked for you better than something else?
Mostly Uta Hagen, which is the, like the Howard Fine studio is that
yeah,
I was
love
at.
Howard Fine.
Yeah, yeah, so that kind of really – was what is my what I do is kind of based on, but I love stuff from Meisner too. Yeah.
Did you study from with Howard for a while?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, you know yeah. Maurice did too, right?
Yes. Yeah.
For
yeah.
a long time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's great. Howard's awesome.
Yeah. And, but I mostly had with Heidi Helen Davis.
Yeah.
His other instructor there.
Sure.
So basically that was kind of the foundation, but I found like little bits and pieces from like, you know, other things that other classes, I would take a little, like Margie Haber, who teaches the auditioning technique,
yeah.
you know, I was like, okay, wow, that's, I never heard that, you know,
sure.
And grab that and you kind of make your own little
well,
thing,
and that's,
right?
sure. you know, that is some, you know, everybody's different and there's, nobody has the same process to connect to either
right.
themselves or, and some material requires different elements of you. So to have a grab bag of, or have a toolbox,
right.
Where you can apply different techniques to different material is helpful because sometimes you might just, if you just got one way to approach
oh,
it,
yeah.
and if it's not working, then
right.
you're stuck. But
yeah.
you're like,
yeah.
okay, that's not working.
Yeah.
Well, let's try this.
That's why I said it took every
yeah.
trick up my sleeve
yeah.
the first 3 months here just to be like,
well,
okay.
that's great. And I got to say, any aspiring actors listening, listen to Perry. No, no, because honestly,
yeah.
your motivation, your drive was amazing. Obviously in school you had it and then
right.
it translated once you made the decision or got over the fear of making
right.
the entry into what you wanted to do. But you should be doing all those things as a young actor.
Right. Yes.
You should be doing those
yeah.
things. Tracking people down, reading the book, studying with everything and figuring out
right.
what your process is because it takes us a long time. Like Maurice taught me so much and it was from Howard Fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he taught me everything. Technique. He taught me technique.
Yeah.
Now I don't do exactly what he does. But and I studied with a few other people that helped me get to where I need to get for
right.
a scene, you know, so it's important just to go 100 miles an hour and take classes and do theater and scene
right.
study and audition and all that stuff, because, I mean, it's
yeah.
it's invaluable.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
what was your first victory?
First victory was a Stouffer's lasagna commercial.
Yes! Commercials. I love them.
Yes.
yes.
It was
amazing.
And it was the odds were in my favor because they needed like a whole group of people, you know?
Sure.
So I'm like, okay, the odds are yeah. better. It's not just one guy.
Right. When you go to the callback and like,
well,
there's
do you remember
20
the,
people and they're like, hey, we need 15.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Do you remember the audition? Like what you had to do?
Yeah. It's about a college kid coming home. And then the mom's so happy to see him. He's like, oh, welcome back. And she's like, I brought some buddies for dinner. And it's the whole group of kids, like
yeah.
the fraternity comes in.
Sure.
And then I just came in and I remember just like giving the mom a name. And I came in, I said, thanks, Mrs. C. You know,
yeah.
and then they kept that for the commercial. So that they like that.
It's amazing when you bring in new ideas. And that's where your improv background really
right.
helped you out.
Yeah.
In commercials, it's so great because if you bring something in that makes them go, oh.
Didn't have to write that. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. No. And that stands out. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. yeah. Like, it's, you know, in a lot of rooms these days, sometimes you'll get, oh, and just feel free to improv. And you're like, oh, man, give me a script.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know what you want. Like, give me a script.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
you know, but with commercials, when there's not a lot there to begin with.
Dude, right. aren't commercials the weirdest auditions?
Yeah. They just want to be entertained,
right?
Right. You just want
yeah.
to be entertained.
It's so useful to have
yeah.
it and to just have and to make specific choices like giving people names like that stuff that really lands
right
so
yeah
so that was helpful
yeah so that was how I made it legit you know I'm on screen and residuals are great you
yes
know?
They were sir
you're like what what again
is, yeah yeah again this is why I chose this
did you have a side job besides the theater company
yes I in college I was a resident advisor. And I was like, this is the best job because you just get free room and board.
Totally.
You just got to hang out and keep the peace, you know, and that's
yeah.
it. And so basically I tried to find that job, and that job was a dorm parent at a boarding school.
Whoa.
So it was in Ojai. You guys know where Ojai
yeah,
is?
Yeah, it's a California commute for
yeah,
commercials.
So, but I got to live for – I had rent free.
Yeah.
Free food. benefits and a salary on top of it. So like I'm spending no money, just saving money. And my job basically started at 3 p.m. when the kids got out of school. So going to classes, auditioning from the morning till the afternoon.
So coming to L.A. every morning from Ojai?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that was one of the things. There's this one – I remember like driving back and going like, oh, my gosh, I'm driving like – an hour and a half round trip for a 5-minute audition, you know?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'd be like, is this even worth it?
Well, he does 5 hours.
I know. Now that I live in Sacramento now, so sometimes.
Wow.
So for like a big commercial.
Now it doesn't sound so bad.
Yeah. So sometimes for a big national commercial, yeah. I'll come down for it.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Good for you.
Or not.
Yeah.
Or not.
But I remember casting. I remember complaining to a casting, and he's like, hey, you know, you just need to get some, you know, new headshots. Or I'm like, yeah, but it's tough to get down for a photographer. I live really far away. And he's like, he basically said something where he's like, hey, if you made that decision to live that far away, you got to find a way to either get fatter tires or whatever to keep up pace with everyone else who's doing it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I'm like, of course.
Right.
You know,
right.
It took someone to be like, open that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, of course. And then that kind of like made me be like, okay, I'm going to do everything, you know, to compensate for that. You
yeah.
know?
That's
so
cool. How long were you doing that?
Then I was there for five years.
Oh, wow. Living in Ojai for 5 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
gangster, I mean, right there. Yeah. Drive, making that drive, dude.
But I mean, the greatest thing is that I was never stuck in L.A.
Right.
Because like as soon as I had a crappy day, I would drive to Ojai and I would live. I was living on 123 acres, you
yeah.
know.
Wow.
And had like it felt like my own estate, you
yeah.
know.
Sure, yeah.
And it's just like relaxing.
Was the work ever hard?
And the work is like taking kids to like Disneyland. It's like it's not even hard work, you know. It's just really being a big brother, being firm but fair.
You know,
and teaching these kids, you know, to grow up to be a responsible grown up when eventually they're gonna be very soon. And so I did that and just saved.
That's cool, man. Making a difference.
Yeah. And
That's just
nice. Saving money, too, you know? So, like, you're not having to be desperate for a job.
Sure.
Yeah, that's
you know,
a big
smelling
deal.
That hunger. So it's like, I kind of had that screw you money, be like, this job would be nice, but ultimately,
And then you had some lasagna money padding your pocket.
Exactly.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
And
that continued like more commercial stuff.
Yeah,
or?
And then slowly, you know, that segued. Then I got a good theatrical agent, and then I would get sent down on you know TV stuff, and then I booked Caroline in the City sitcom.
Oh,
nice.
Yeah.
First one with Leah Thompson, who I had a crush on from like Back
to
the Future.
Oh, of course.
Come on,
dude. Back to the Future, one of the best movies ever.
that was a great show, Malcolm
Getz.
Oh my God,
such
just
good comedic timing.
Great show.
I got to work with James Burrows, who was directing it.
He's
like a legend.
The master.
You know? So I had like the best, like a live audience, the best director in sitcom with my crush, you know, from growing up. I'm like, this is amazing first job.
Right.
And then later we had like something where Leah kept cracking up during a line that I kept saying, and then they put it into TV's Bloopers and Practical Jokes. So I was on Dick Clark's. He was like, now watch actor Perry Shen as he breaks Leah Thompson. I'm like, oh my God, this is an amazing first job.
That is an amazing first job. Wow.
That's great. Leah Thompson and lasagna.
That does show your age a little bit. That was in the 90s?
97.
Yeah.
Well, at least it was late 90s. It was late.
I remember Out of This World. I used to watch it.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Yeah, amazing.
I know. It's crazy. I'm 3 years older than you. I'm 49.
I know.
That's crazy. Yeah.
So
that was live audience
half
the time when it was like a big deal. It was a big deal for like the first season.
Oh, and then they started tailing.
Yeah, because it was when they tried to change, they make the new primetime 7:30. It was the big campaign.
Okay.
New primetime 7:30, like before Cosby and before all the stuff. New primetime 7:30. So it was like Charles in Charge. Busted Loose. So we're on Universal. We're on the lot at Universal.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
I'm
in high school. And
my gosh.
It was the tram would drive by, and it was so cool, you know?
Yeah.
And then the primetime 7:30 didn't work. And then we went to some studio somewhere that nobody's ever heard of.
Wow.
It was a small studio, and it was
see the change.
Oh, dude. It was unbelievable. It was still fun. We had a good time. But we had a live audience at Universal, which was crazy.
Did they pipe in the audience afterwards?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they did.
It was all laugh track.
I'm trying to remember if it was a laugh track show or not. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but anyway. But the live audience is pretty interesting.
Yeah. It's great. Yeah. It's just, you know, it's like theater and TV. You get to do multiple takes. It's not one shot. So it's the best of every world.
And at that point, you're still living
I was still living in Ojai.
Yeah.
And then, then later more TV gigs. And then...
What made you move to L.A.?
To move to L.A.?
And give up that cush job in Ojai?
After five, six years...
He saved $1 million.
Yeah, right.
And he drove, and
he bought a house on the top of the hill.
He bought a house up in Hollywood Hills.
It was two things. One was that you know that it's time to leave when you this is like the kids would always have to like check in and out with me when they're going someplace. Like Mr. Shen, knock on my door, like I'm checking out to Vaughn's, Mr. Shen, I'm back in from Vaughn's. So like, you have to keep accountability to follow
like
the kids
all day long.
All day long, yeah. Yeah. And then so I remember one time where they're like, Mr. Shen, checking out the Vons, and I was like, just go! I had to check myself. I'm like, okay, maybe it's time to leave. I've had too much. And like, I was living with 80 teenagers.
Yeah, bye.
Oh my gosh.
And then I booked this movie that was an independent kind of darling, and a studio bought it, and I was the lead of it. So it was like, this is the time, I think, where I've got this heat. And I'm sick of this job, and I've saved money. I'm like, so then I bought a place, and so like that was the transition, like leaving my safety net, which was huge.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. What was the movie?
It's called Better Luck Tomorrow, and it came out in 2002. But at Sundance, it was one of the 16.
Did you go?
I did.
To Sundance?
Yeah.
Awesome.
The first year I went just to kind of see because we were supposed to like it was rumored that we were supposed to get into Sundance, so I was kind of wanting to like get the lay of the. The land.
And this is before it was too crazy, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it was like now.
It was
the idea of going to Sundance now is like, oh, it feels like work.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was kind of cool still.
Yeah.
So we got in, and first, it was not looking good. All these companies were like lowballing us to buy the film until Roger. So basically, the movie's about these high school kids who commit a murder. It's based on a true story in Orange County. These Asian kids who commit a murder, you know, and they just kind of like think they can get away with anything, you know, and one critic said, you know, this is a great movie, it looks great, your actors are great, but why would you make such a horrible film for Asian Americans, you know? And then Roger Ebert, the critic, stood up and defended our movie, saying, "You would never say this to like a bunch of Italian Americans. Why would you make this gangster movie? You know, this is a good movie. Why does it matter their ethnicity?" And all of a sudden, there was a huge bidding war for our movie. We became like the hottest thing.
Wow!
And then, out of nowhere, MTV Films purchased us, and they had never purchased a film before. This was their first acquisition, and they said, "This is perfect for our brand because it's young, and it's like edgy,
right?"
And then when we came out, we were the number one movie that weekend per theater. Like, we're supposed to make, like, we're only four theaters, but we're supposed to make, I think, like 10,000 a theater in order to move on to Nashaway.
Sure. Yeah.
But we made 30 grand a theater. We tripled it, and all of a sudden it was kind of like a Cinderella story.
How cool is that?
What a cool thing to be a part of.
Yeah.
And so then things became just like. Got on a run of sorts, or
yes and no. Everyone loved the movie, and I got me into a lot of rooms. But kind of like why we made the movie was because we were kind of frustrated with the kind of roles that I was always playing, like a delivery boy or like a martial artist.
So you were part of the making of the movie too. You just weren't cast in it. You were part of the creative team, kind of.
Yes and no. Like the director, we kind of like were all, like the director maxed out six of his credit cards. Went 250 grand in debt.
Oh, wow.
So we're kind of like, we're in the trenches with him.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, lucky for him, he made it back probably because most people don't.
Yeah. Well, now he directs all the Fast and Furious movies. Justin Lin.
Oh, he's doing fine.
Yeah. He's okay now. Yeah.
Yeah.
He also produces Magnum P.I. and Scorpion.
He's fine.
Yeah, he's good. But Better Luck Tomorrow is kind of what.
Propelled his breakout. That's cool.
So that was kind of the scenario.
So you're in all the Fast and Furious movies too.
No, this other guy who was in the movie was though.
Yeah. Come on, Justin, help a brother out, man.
But the character that he plays in Better Luck Tomorrow is the character that he plays in the Fast and Furious movies.
Oh, for
he
real?
He gave him the same name.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's like...
That's funny.
It's kind of like a throwback, and he drives the same car that he drove in our movie, so it's kind of like...
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So it's like the through line of...
Oh, so he directed and acted?
No. He just directed... the guy who was in the movie, his name is Sung Kang.
Oh, in what movie? Better Luck Tomorrow?
Better Luck Tomorrow.
Gotcha.
Yeah, he plays a guy named Han.
Okay, gotcha.
And he plays Han
in the Fast and Furious movies.
Oh, cool. Wow. That's cool, man.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's played one character for many years, and now you've played one character.
That's right.
Yeah,
yes. Too,
right? Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, so did you have any familiarity with daytime before you came here?
Just my grandmother watched GH in the 80s.
That's awesome.
And so I would watch, and so, like, I thought Tristan Rogers was the coolest guy with his natural accent.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
His gun holster without a shirt on. It's like, what is this? What is going on?
Yeah.
So basically that was kind of, and then later in the 90s when Antonio Sabato came on with Jaeger, right?
Jaeger, yeah.
Jaeger, yeah. Yeah.
Jaeger, Jaegermeister.
Yeah. Jaeger is Jaeger, yeah.
Jaeger. Yeah, that's right when I got here. We started to get kind of together. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
That was a little before him, but yeah. Yeah. He was a big deal.
Yeah. So those are kind of like those moments.
Yeah.
When this audition came up, were you? I mean, it was obviously you didn't know you'd be here for 6 years, but like, you know, having done movies, having done TV, were you like, huh? Oh, so Barbara, that's okay, sure. Or like, where
yes,
were you in
absolutely.
Your? Where were you in your career at that point? Was there?
I was about to get out of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Out of acting?
Out of acting, yeah.
Really? And what?
I was thinking of either doing the photography or getting behind the camera. Just like I just did not want to pound the pavement anymore. It just wasn't fun at all. And it's like, I know I can do it. But
and you got a family
reason,
also.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
It's like something.
When, at what point in your career did you start a family? Like, because that's always
After Better Luck, like a couple years after Better Luck Tomorrow.
Okay, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
things were going well. I just bought a house. You know, just things were good, and then things started slowing down. And I think also with kids, I want to be at home with them more, so I wasn't as hungry.
Sure.
So that also played a big factor in it too.
Huge factor.
So I want to see them grow, and I would have when they were about to be born, and if there was like a work conflict, I would always have my contract like I can leave set at any time to watch my wife give birth. non-negotiable. But like 2012, around that, I was like done. I was like, I'm tired. Tired, and I kind of like, if this is how it's gonna end, it's okay, because I was the lead of this this movie that kind of like hit all those landmarks of seeing, being on the talk shows and all that kind of, I got a taste of that, and so I was like, okay, maybe this is just another chapter, And then, so when the thing with General Hospital came, I was like, first of all, frankly, there's hardly any Asian people on soap opera.
Yeah.
So I don't know anybody that I can ask for advice that personally as a friend, And it was like,
right.
And then I get in there, in Mark Teshner's office, and all these guys they're over 6 feet, and they're models. I've seen them in model camp. I'm like, oh my gosh, everybody's so good looking. I was like, this is ridiculous. What am I doing here?
Right.
That's always the audition though. You're like, what am I doing here? And then you end up getting it.
Yeah. No. Well, the thing is, I was like, the only thing I can do is out-act all these guys. That's only I can offer.
Sure.
That's the only thing I can offer.
Perry.
I know. So then I did, my most masculine performance. And
oh, right.
Like,
that's
you're the next gay character, you know? So, so that's kind of how that came about.
That's
but
crazy.
I was like, there's no way. So I think that's what also is like, kind of like when you get too much in your head.
Yeah.
When it's kind of like, you know what? Let me just let her rip and do whatever I'm going to do, because I'm not probably going
to get
this.
That's like the million-dollar formula, right, if you could sell it.
Right.
Like, when does that switch happen for people of, you know what? Let's just go. Balls to the wall. I'm just going to give it my all. There's not going to be any fear, inhibitions anymore.
Right.
I'm just like, I don't care. I'm going for it.
Yeah.
Well, and it's funny because, like, sometimes it's like with repetition, you do a lot of auditions, you get that. But then there's that one that comes up, and you're like, oh my God, I'm really right for this.
Right.
Oh my God, this is one that I should get.
Yes.
And so no matter how many times,
you can't trick yourself as much as you want to until you know you shouldn't care about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, like, this is a big deal.
This could be,
I'm nervous.
This could be the one, right?
Yeah.
So no matter how many, and then, but then I guess you could say, oh, well, when you get enough of those,
Right.
Like, sure, but those know, sometimes aren't.
Those don't always
lot.
Come around.
Yeah, yeah. That's the reason why they're so special, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But then it all it happens when you're like, oh, well, they want a 6'5" model, and I'm here. This is a big one, but I'm not gonna get it. And
right.
then, and
but
then,
it's so
and
funny.
Then you don't care, and then all of a sudden they're like, oh.
That's interesting, right?
Yeah.
That's how it happens.
And like, then you see all these stories like, you know, like this, like, oh, I was a fish out of water. There's guys who are, you know, 6 foot,
right.
whatever, and you go in and get it. And then there's always the story of, I went to an audition with a buddy. He needed a ride.
Yeah.
And they saw me outside and said, hey, you want to audition? Yeah. And then I got it. And now I'm a huge star.
Yeah,
exactly,
yeah.
right?
You know, so.
Are you enjoying playing? Yeah. I mean, 6 years, this character is, he's got some fun sides, right? I mean, he's got his ethics are questionable, and he gets to make a lot of interesting choices where you kind of got to find a way to make them make sense to at least him.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And is that a challenge? Is it fun? Is it like,
it's always been fun. I've always been trying to do just him, you know? And,
sure.
And what has been the, I think just maybe just because of being on for this many years.
Yeah.
I'm finding finally that people are like, they're getting him. Not everybody does,
right.
but like at least there's a portion like, okay, this is what I come to expect of him, and they enjoy his mannerisms, his certain things he does.
Sure.
Whereas before, people were just kind of like black or white. He's a bad guy or good guy, you know.
Right.
That was it.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And
well, I got you until you joined Donna Day.
Wait a second, Brad.
I was like, what?
Brad joined Donna Day.
Kind of ish, yeah.
He was, did he have his own motive?
He was on the periphery,
on the outskirts.
Or he's just like, I get it. Or when
he just
like,
needed somebody to talk to, you know, because he's keeping the secret. So he just needs
right.
somebody to.
Yeah.
And, well, you know.
So where are you on that? Where are you with the obviously Shiloh's dead?
Yes,
now
he's gone.
Are we on air? Yeah, dead.
Yeah.
So where that's it, right? Shiloh's done.
Yes. But basically there's
they need a new fount. They need a new head.
Can you imagine? That'd be amazing.
That's amazing. It's a great idea.
That'd be a great story. He just changes the name.
Right. Yeah.
Instead of DOD, it'll be BOB.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever that means.
Big old Brad.
Big old Brad. Come on to big old Brad's house.
We got what you need.
So what does the audience, because I don't watch the show.
Right.
So does the audience know the secret?
The audience knows the secret. Yes.
Okay.
And this is a baby secret.
This is the baby secret.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does Lucas know the secret?
No, he doesn't.
Okay. Because that's another thing. When you're a guy with questionable ethics and you have a partner, that you have to you can't just be a bad guy on an island anymore. You have to.
Right.
Right. So
yeah.
that's challenging.
Yeah. So I mean, ultimately, it's kind of like the anchor is basically, you know, what you would do for somebody.
Sure.
And we've always wanted a family. And, you know, from day one, the baby that we adopted died.
Right.
And this is the baby that you got on the side of the road.
Correct.
From Nell.
Yes. And Nell, well, the thing is that as I'm bringing my baby who has died from SIDS on day one to the hospital, she's given birth on the roadside. And she knows that it's going down. She's going to jail. They're going to take her baby away from her.
Yes.
She says, you know what? Your baby's dead. Mine isn't alive. Lucas doesn't know yet because Lucas hasn't seen the baby yet. He was in surgery.
Yeah.
So she said, let's trade babies. That way, I'd rather you have it than the Corinthos family.
This is the baby highway. I think this is where Maxie had her baby.
Oh, really? She had it too?
I think it's a baby highway. Yeah. It's amazing, dude. Anytime there's a baby drama, we go to the highway.
It's prolific.
Because it's out in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
But everyone has babies
there. And the docks is some, you know, sometimes people are walking around.
The docks and the highway. That's right. If you want anything. Anything baby.
So is the baby in high school yet? Or
not yet, but he just celebrated his first birthday. But here's the stuff that it kind of like, I think, makes people really despise Brad is that the baby who died, that baby belonged to Willow. So Willow thinks that she knows I adopted the baby, so she still thinks that her baby's alive and is Wiley.
Yes, that's going to be not good.
So you've got this sweet girl. She's like trying to give us our baby because she said you adopted. That's only fair. But she's like that she knows that she thinks that's his kid.
Anytime you have scenes by yourself now on the show, you got to be crying.
Who is
just like,
you just got to be crying. Like, I don't want to do this, but I have to.
Is Michael your baby's actual father?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
So, and who was the dad of Willow's kid?
Shiloh.
Okay, there's no definitive, like, like,
yeah, it's kind of
like characteristics that this kid should have that would make her go, oh, that's not my kid, or that's my kid, or
no,
do you know what I mean?
But the kid has a heart condition that Michael has that's hereditary.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So that may. So
and this, you know, Shiloh's kid would be like, look like the devil.
Yeah,
so.
He would have horns, a tail,
so,
a little pitchfork.
So you would know right away with the pitchfork.
It's
you're
obvious,
like, oh, that's Shiloh's kid. He's got a pitchfork.
Yeah. Right.
Wow. So how close are they playing to that story? Is that, does it feel like they're going to reveal it?
Yeah.
Sooner?
How long
like
has this been
that,
going?
Like,
this has been going on for a while.
It's going on for a little over a year now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it time to wrap it up?
I'm not
feel,
to say.
No, I know, but does it feel like it?
Well,
because they, you know, they can stretch.
I mean,
daytime
I try to do my
stores.
Histories, and it's like there's some swaps that haven't happened for like years.
Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
And
right.
All I know is that when I didn't have stuff going on, and I wasn't a bad guy, I wasn't on the show for 9 months. I was put on a major back burner. So
listen, it's good to be bad. It's good to be bad.
I'm just going to keep doing
just roll with it,
whatever's coming. Yeah.
That's awesome, dude. You're doing a great job, too.
You sure are, man.
Well, actually, I mean, when I first came on the show, you were kind of like my inspiration of like, like just because you're a non-traditional soap, quote-unquote soap guy.
Oh,
and I'm
aware.
Like, and he's like succeeding. Like, people love him and you have a great character. So I'm like, okay, I just got to. Just don't worry about that BS of like,
don't let,
archetype.
Just do your work.
And it's like, Bradford's doing it, you know?
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah. You did a
thanks.
Great job.
Yeah.
Up until recently.
You were right to model after me. Yes.
For sure. If you want to not work, do exactly what he did.
Wait, he's in Sacramento now. What's going on?
I know. He's living the dream in Sacramento.
Oh, dude,
this guy's going to run for office up there.
That's the long game.
Work-life balance, bro. That's what I'm striving for.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I could use a little more work in the work-life balance.
You want more work?
No, I don't. Don't
you do want more work? Because I can give you more work. Do you want more?
No, I'm good.
Okay, now you're good. So where can people find you? Is there anything you got going on you want to promote?
Yeah, because
Twitter.
So I've seen you promote some stuff. Do you have passions outside of this? That
I published 2 graphic novels.
That's pretty
cool. Okay, well, that's something. Thanks.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
And then, I produced a movie that's on Amazon Prime right now.
Yes, that stuff. Yeah,
Harry, let's get it. Do we have to pull freaking teeth here? Tell us what you...
But, I mean, these things have happened a while. You
no,
know, like
it doesn't matter,
ago.
But listen, we have a great audience who loves to support us and watch things and read things. So
the 2 graphic novels are called Secret Identities, and the second one's called Shattered. And basically, since I was into comics, we knew that there weren't a lot of Asian American characters because a lot of them were created like in the 30s, you know? So like Superman is kind of like his group of people are kind of going to stay his group of people, you know?
Right.
And so we're like, we got to create a whole new universe of just Asian American superheroes, you know?
Yeah, sure.
And kind of like, and we knew a lot of comic properties were being optioned. So we're like, okay, let's get all the Asian American writers that we know and all the Asian artists and we'll pair them up and
that's
create
cool.
this anthology.
Yeah.
And I wrote a couple stories too. And so like mine was kind of like, the descendants of the people who survived the Hiroshima bombings were getting powers from the radiation, you know.
Wow.
Cool.
They're Asian American, so America's the one that did the bombing, but they're Americans too, you know,
right.
So they feel conflicted.
Of course.
Kind of like that was kind of
that's
like.
That's fascinating, yeah.
The graphic novels that I did. And then I produced and started in a movie called Unidentified that's on Amazon Prime, and it's my baby, so it's very proud of it.
When people watch stuff on Amazon, does that directly.
Can you see? Do you get numbers for that?
Or does Amazon send you a check? Or like, how does it work?
No, but the distributor does.
Okay, great.
That sent it out. So
that,
we know from England we get this amount of money.
Sure,
and Australia.
Sure.
And
that's
I
cool,
see.
Man.
Yeah, because I wasn't sure. Like Amazon, like they don't buy everything that they have. Like they're not like Netflix. That
right. It's kind of a flat rate.
Yeah.
For a certain period of time.
Sure,
and it's part of a waterfall from a distributor.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Right. So you don't really get Amazon doesn't go hey. 20,000 people watched it today.
We don't get the numbers.
You don't get any numbers
stuff.
Like that.
Yeah.
Because the distributor likes to keep you.
To fudge it a little?
Yeah. They like to keep you in the dark a little bit.
Yeah.
They like
the
to do their
go.
Job. They like to do their job.
But social media, you on there?
Yes. Just my name, at Parry Shen, Parryshen.
Cross all platforms?
On Twitter?
No, on
Instagram, same thing?
Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
Cool, man.
Awesome, buddy.
Appreciate
well, thank you.
Thanks
for
your time,
joining
dude.
Us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having
Many
me, guys.
Many more happy years.
What? Are you drunk?
Yes.
What, that was like a New Year's Eve. Yeah. Many more happy years.
Hold on to that baby.
And that was almost Audrey Hepburn, too.
You're hang like, on to that baby.
All right, man.
Well, that was great, man.
Perry Shen.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, it's great.
Yep. Great story. Hey, like, and that's the thing, nowadays, we talked about it a little in the podcast with him. You know, pick your sport. Figure out what you're doing. Stick to it. No.
Yeah.
Go out, learn things.
Try things.
Try things.
Try things, right? That's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
It's like he did so much and he worked hard and he deserved all this success because he worked hard.
Yeah.
But, for parents, I just want my kid to try stuff.
Right.
Hey, you don't like it? Great. Don't do it.
Great.
But don't just stick with one thing because it's just not going to be good for you as a person anyway.
Totally.
And that was one of the things my mom always did. It was like, hey, try it. If you don't like it, don't do it. Yeah. Try it. Go ahead. Try it. Try it. Always encouraged me to try stuff, which is great.
Yeah.
So, but he has a great story and, he was a very motivated guy and he worked.
Yeah. Awesome. Well,
thanks, Perry.
Thank you, Perry. As we said earlier, we're traveling this weekend, but since, anyone that wanted to come is coming and we're sold out. So thank you guys.
Awesome.
We're having a lot of fun on our supporter page.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is like, we're getting all these emails about, can you save us a table?
Oh, I know.
At events, which is cool because supporters are kind of getting together and going, hey, anyone going to Houston? Anyone going here or whatever?
Yeah, it's really cool, man.
So it's cool. So we're having a great time on our supporter page. I'm sure you've heard us talk about it. If you haven't, go check it out at our Facebook page, Stone Cold and the Jackal Facebook. Click the blue button. And we just got great exclusive content there.
Did you see what I posted today?
No, what'd you post?
Do you remember we were on a it was one of our tours last year. We tried to make a funny Instagram video about being in Delaware. Do you remember that? We were in a parking lot.
Said it.
I finally edited something together. And
did you?
Gave it to the supporters.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, what was great was you posted that behind the scenes footage.
Yeah.
At the actual show.
Yeah.
One of our shows when the mic cord went out.
Yeah.
And I kind of improv'd a little bit.
On one of our Facebook Lives the other week, we were talking about, how we can't figure out how to use the Facebook Live thing. We were having technical difficulties. So there was a moment on our tour through Texas last year where we had some technical difficulties and we had it on tape.
Yeah, that was
so
funny.
So I shared it with supporters there. Yeah. So, it's some of the stuff we can't disperse widely. So it's fun to share with our supporter group. And so it's a lot of fun for us.
Check it out. But, having fun on the road,
dude.
It's amazing.
More podcasts that we're recording today. So we have a full lineup of great stuff coming your way.
Yeah, it's cool. Thank you guys
so much
for your support. We appreciate you.
We'll see you next week.
Have a good one.
Hey, friends. As always, a big thank you for listening to the show.
Whoop, whoop.
We would like to ask a small but very important favor of you. It'll only take a few minutes. And if you're one of the first people to do it, Podcast One will make it worth your time. Literally. We would love you to complete a short survey because the information you give us can help make things better for the show and for you as a listener. So go to podcastone.com/survey and everything will be right there for you. That's podcastone.com/survey.
Yeah, and what's cool, the first 250 people who complete the survey will get a $10 gift card to Amazon. Yeah, is that nice?
I like
and two grand prize winners will be selected to get a $100 gift card
to
Amazon.
More.
That's a lot more. It's 10 times more, Bradford. How about that? Free. That's free money.
That is.
It's free, right? It's a win-win for everybody. It's important because our shows are supported by advertisers.
As you may have noticed.
So so filling out this will really help us cater to the needs of you as a listener. So please go to podcast.
We'll get you deals. Tell us what you like. We'll get you deals.
podcast1.com/survey. Do they say that anymore? /?
I don't know. I think people just know what the way the slash goes.
Okay, great. Answer some questions and potentially make some money along the way. And thank you guys so much. We really mean it from the bottom of our hearts. Thank you for being dedicated to us and a dedicated listener.
Thank you guys.